Chapter 163. Little Dorothy yielded willingly. She glided away into the prison for a few moments, returned, and said she was ready to go. They went out by another staircase, avoiding the lodge, and coming into the front courtyard, now all quiet and deserted, gained the street. It was one of those summer evenings when there is no greater darkness than a long twilight. The vista of street and bridge was plain to see, and the sky was serene and beautiful. People stood and sat at their doors, playing with children and enjoying the evening. Numbers were walking for air. The worry of the day had almost worried itself out, and few but themselves were hurried. As they crossed the bridge, the clear steeples of the many churches looked as if they had advanced out of the murk that usually enshrouded them, and come much nearer. The smoke that rose into the sky had lost its dingy hue, and taken a brightness upon it. The beauties of the sunset had not faded from the long light films of cloud that lay at peace in the horizon. From a radiant center, over the whole length and breadth of the tranquil firmament, great shoots of light streamed among the early stars, like signs of the blessed later covenant of peace and hope that changed the crown of thorns into a glory. Less remarkable, now that she was not alone, and it was darker, Mrs. Clennam hurried on at little Dorrit's side, unmolested. They left the great thoroughfare at the turning by which she had entered it, and wound their way down among the silent, empty, cross streets. Their feet were at the gateway, when there was a sudden noise like thunder. What was that? Let us make haste in, apostrophe cried Mrs. Clennam. They were in the gateway. Little Dorrit, with a piercing cry, held her back. In one swift instant the old house was before them, with the man lying smoking in the window. Another thundering sound, and it heaved, surged outward, opened asunder in 50 places, collapsed, and fell. Deafened by the noise, stifled, choked, and blinded by the dust, they hid their faces and stood rooted to the spot. The dust storm, driving between them, and the placid sky, parted for a moment, and showed them the stars. As they looked up, wildly crying for help, the great pile of chimneys, which was then alone left standing like a tower in a whirlwind, rocked, broke, and hailed itself down upon the heap of ruin, as if every tumbling fragment were intent on burying the crushed wretch deeper. So blackened by the flying particles of rubbish, as to be unrecognizable, they ran back from the gateway into the street, crying and shrieking. There, Mrs. Clennam dropped upon the stones, and she never from that hour moved, so much as a finger again, or had the power to speak one word. For upwards of 3 years she reclined in a wheelchair, looking attentively at those about her, and appearing to understand what they said. But the rigid silence she had so long held was ever more enforced upon her, and except that she could move her eyes, and faintly express a negative and affirmative with her head, she lived and died a statue. Affery had been looking for them at the prison, and had caught sight of them at a distance on the bridge. She came up to receive her old mistress in her arms, to help to carry her into a neighboring house, and to be faithful to her. The mystery of the noises was out now. Affery, like greater people, had always been right in her facts, and always wrong in the theories she deduced from them. When the storm of dust had cleared away, and the summer night was calm again, numbers of people choked up every avenue of access, and parties of diggers were formed to relieve one another in digging among the ruins. There had been 100 people in the house at the time of its fall, there had been 50, there had been 15, there had been 2. Rumor finally settled the number at 2, the foreigner and Mr. Flintwinch. The diggers dug all through the short night, by flaring pipes of gas, and on a level with the early sun, and deeper below it as it rose into its zenith, and aslant of it as it declined, and on a level with it again as it departed. Sturdy digging, and shoveling, and carrying away, in carts, barrows, and baskets, went on without intermission, by night and by day, but it was night for the second time, when they found the dirty heap of rubbish, that had been the foreigner before his head had been shivered to atoms, like so much glass, by the great beam, that lay upon him, crushing him. Still, they had not come upon Flintwood yet, so the sturdy digging and shoveling and carrying away went on without intermission by night and by day. It got about that the old house had had famous cellarage, which indeed was true, and that Flintwinch had been in the cellar at the moment, or had had time to escape into one, and that he was safe under its strong arch, and even that he had been heard to cry, in hollow, subterranean, suffocated notes, "Here I am!" At the opposite extremity of the town it was even known that the excavators had been able to open a communication with him through a pipe, and that he had received both soup and brandy by that channel, and that he had said with admirable fortitude that he was all right, my lads, with the exception of his collarbone. But the digging and shoveling and carrying away went on without intermission, until the ruins were all dug out, and the cellars opened to the light, and still no Flintwinch, living or dead, all right or all wrong, had been turned up by pick or spade. It began then to be perceived that Flintwinch had not been there at the time of the fall, and it began then to be perceived that he had been rather busy elsewhere, converting securities into as much money as could be got for them on the shortest notice, and turning to his own exclusive account his authority to act for the firm. Affery, remembering that the clever one had said he would explain himself further in 24 hours' time, determined for her part that his taking himself off within that period with all he could get was the final satisfactory sum and substance of his promised explanation. But she held her peace, devoutly thankful to be quit of him. As it seemed reasonable to conclude that a man who had never been buried could not be unburied, the diggers gave him up when their task was done, and did not dig down for him into the depths of the earth. This was taken in ill part by a great many people, who persisted in believing that Flintwinch was lying somewhere among the London geological formation. Nor was their belief much shaken by repeated intelligence which came over in course of time, that an old man who wore the tie of his neckcloth under one ear, and who was very well known to be an Englishman, consorted with the Dutchman on the quaint banks of the canals of The Hague, and in the drinking shops of Amsterdam, under the style and designation of Mynheer van Flintwinch. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.